The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. Hello. C'est parti.
Boy.
Off we go.
Yeah, yeah.
The fuck? I just said c'est parti earlier.
Well, didn't you just
whisper in the mean into me?
I didn't hear you say that, man. I'm sorry. You know what? I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Yeah, yeah. Forget about it.
Thank you. You're so prickly, man.
I told you.
Yeah, I suppose you did. I suppose you did. Matthew, it is the Sunday Scotch Society.
Yeah, yeah.
I am K. Quincy Parker.
I am Matthew B. Kelly, here at beautiful Crypto Isle. On the weekend during the Oasis on-chain conference. So if you hear any bustling in the background, that's what it is.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Our friend Steph is doing his big one, as
yep.
they say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Matthew and I, and instead of being out there among the blockchain crypto geniuses, we have secreted ourselves away. It is the end of January, the end of the first month of 2025. We are now living
in a material world.
And I am not a material girl. I am a material girl. Whatever, Matthew.
There you go.
But
don't worry about these weird people who's going to rant at you about gender conformity.
Well, I mean, given what's going on across the pond or up the way in our neighbor to the north, and given the shocking number of our countrymen and countrywomen who find themselves somehow represented by the new president of the United States. I won't use any of the pejorative terms I've heard from TikTok or Instagram or Facebook or the news for him. I want to say I'm enjoying the Mexican president's response to him. I am enjoying the response of the European Parliament to him. But you could say that I feel fairly confident that there is a significant portion of our country and our community that would speak firmly to me for saying that I am a material girl.
I almost decided to not continue down this road, but I'm going to throw that to the wind, and I'm going to say that, one, given the context in which you we're talking it, they would be extra stupid. And I say extra because even if it were in a different context, it would be stupid. So the third thing that I would say about that is that, well, actually, we'll leave that for a bit.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Fair enough. How in the name of all that is decent and holy, Matthew, are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty good. Is that enough of am I passing, as they say?
I mean, I was about to say your skin is fair enough, so yeah, I think you're passing in that way.
Yeah, they also use that in the some of the neurodivergent people who are masking.
Well,
acts if they pass.
If the people who are neurodivergent are okay with you.
Oh, I'm sure they're not.
Well, in that case, you know, it's probably best we move on. I don't want your car to get egged. Your house to get TP'd, as they used to do back
in
the day.
Were I to be egged, that would signal to me that they really, really mean it, given the price of eggs at the moment.
And boy, listen, what is it now? $12? Jesus. Anyway, so I'm glad that you're well. I too am well. I want to get to this week's tipple. You and I are familiar with this particular tipple because the first time we had it together, it was at one of our Whiskey Wednesdays, which we used to do here at Crypto Isle after the Hump Day Huddle on Wednesday evenings. You know, we grab a nice bottle of something, we'd sit out on the porch, have some sips with some friends, some cigars. You know, my friend Orlando used to come and roll fresh cigars for us. We would sip the tipple of the night, have conversation with our friends and acquaintances, meet new people, talk philosophy, whatever the case may be. So this is not necessarily a throwback, but I wanted to try this in the context of the Sunday Scotch Society, because we've both developed our palates significantly since then, I think. And so today we are going to sip the Highland Park Magnus, which I don't know if you remember, but I think when you asked me about this last year, I told you this was actually my favorite scotch that I had tried over the course of that year. And so I'm really anxious to see if the Highland Park Magnus lives up to my own memory of it being a really great scotch. What I remember is smoke. I remember peat. I remember a little sweetness. I remember some nuts and a little grass, maybe. So that's my memory of it. And I don't know if you remember back in the day.
And I don't think my memory is that good to dial back to any specific tipple.
Oh, well, I disagree. I remember a couple of episodes ago, you were able to parse apart the Whistle Pig 10-year-old small batch rye pretty sharply. So, you know, I'm feeling like
you're denigrating yourself. Well, see if it jogs my memory.
Yeah, I'm sure.
How about that?
All right, so I'm just going to jump in and do the thing. So, the nose. Honey. A little grass, like I say. Some burnt sugar. I see your face, so I'm going to let you tell us what you're experiencing.
Hints of apple. Mm-hmm. I think I'm even getting a little bit of the caramel on the nose there.
Oddly enough, Matthew, caramel is burnt sugar.
No, I know. And as soon as I open my mouth, I brace myself for your response.
Of course you did. We know each other well. All right. So let's do it, man.
I think the first thing that I'm going to say is that is agreeable.
What's agreeable about it?
Slightest hint of nuts.
Like almonds or pecans?
Closer to a walnut, maybe.
I was just going to say, actually, a walnut, or for me, maybe Brazil nuts. You know, one of those really fleshy nuts that has like a deep flavor, yeah.
I'm picking up on some grass notes. I don't know if they're the same. This is more of a hay, dried grass. There is an odd fermented note here for me. Like, it's taking me back to first memories of beer.
Mm. I mean, it's not heavily peated, but it is a peated single malt. So
it's not. Smoke didn't jump out at me. So if it's there, it's background for me. I'm gonna. This is gonna be my fourth sip. So I think that says a lot already about this scotch.
For sure. For sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. There's the slight smokiness, peat.
More on the finish, almost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's very soft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Without being thin. It's still a robust sensation, but just dialed way down.
Yeah. But one of the things that I am experiencing is that I thought I remembered it being a little sweeter than this.
Well, on the first sip, just at the tip of the tongue, it was a surprisingly sweet, but not surprising in a shocking way. It's just like, oh, I didn't expect that note. Mm-hmm. But as it washes over the palate, it's not a very strong sensation that persists.
Yeah, it's this is where. When distillers talk about complexity and when they talk about the fact that these whiskies are actually blends of different barrels that a master distiller is blending to create an overall sensation. You know, I think that's one of the real benefits of being able to enjoy a whiskey like this at your leisure, right? Is that you are able to sip it, you are able to experience it as the complexity is blooming. That sweetness is a fulfillment of the promise of the nose for me, where we talked about the burnt sugar and the caramel, right? So I did expect a little sweetness, but I expected it to stay sweet longer. And I guess, I bet you if we were having it with either a drop of water or a block of ice, that sweetness would probably last a little longer. But without that...
Let me tell you something about what you're saying right now. First of all, this finish is pleasantly long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's still developing. And there are... The smoky notes are coming out for me. And as my tongue hits the top of my mouth, I am getting lingering sweetness where I didn't have it before.
So maybe that's what my memory is then. Is that as it builds up, because remember now that you've had four sips of it. Five if I'm counting.
Five?
Yeah, because after you said this is going to be my fourth sip, then you had another one.
Well, who's counting?
I am, clearly.
I mean, it's still just one finger.
Of course.
Or even less, maybe.
Maybe.
But
but I think maybe that's what my memory is, maybe, of sweetness, is that it does build up and it leaves an overall impression of sweet with a little... But that sweetness isn't sugary sweetness. It's like honey sweetness.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And then also the thing about that adds to the complexity of these things is that it very much depends on what you were doing before. Like, what is the current state of your mouth?
Mm.
Right.
Mm-hmm,
And not too long. You know, I didn't go and get a complete palate cleanser so I could sit down and sip this fine scotch.
Which is horrible of you to admit. But it's also the status quo.
No, that's most but Saturdays. That's how you do it, right? And my palate was fresh enough that it's not being impinged upon by anything. But it is reacting differently to if I had not eaten anything for 6 hours.
You would be laid out on the ground by now if you had not eaten anything for 6 hours.
I don't know. I mean, I take some very small sips. So it's been four, maybe five, but they're quite tiny. I mean, look at how much is still in a glass compared to what you poured.
Fair enough. Fair enough. This the challenge is, this is why we need to get this this video situation happening.
No. You know, I'm growing against it, because then we can't lie as easily.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. All right. I think I'm gonna. All right, so I'm going to give you fair warning now.
Okay.
That at the end of the conversation.
I've been quoting that. I do apologize, but not sincerely.
At the end of the episode, I am going to ask you.
No, it's on the list.
I agree this is on the list.
Okay.
Hands down. That's not what I was going to say.
Okay.
I was going to ask you to rate the sips that we had in January.
January sips ratings.
Yes. From 1 to 5. I'm going to ask you for list placement potential for January as well. I'm glad that we agree that the Magnus, the Highland Park Magnus, is on the list. That's no question about that. Speaking of Magnus, it's a very kingly name. Look how adroitly I segued from talking about this wonderful whiskey to introducing the subject of our philosophical conversation.
Oh, go on.
Yes. Jean Domain, born in 1625, died in 1696, was a writer who argued in favor of absolute monarchy in his essay, Social Order and Absolute Monarchy. Now, absolutism is a theory, it's a political theory that gives power to monarchs, reducing the power of nobles, and centralizing the nation's leadership around the person of the king. Absolute monarchy means the king has absolute power and is not answerable to anyone but God for his actions.
Yeah, so if I may summarize, and then you tell me if it's close enough to your understanding, is that the king does not so much make law as the king's will is law,
the king's
regardless of precedent.
Right. Well, the king is the law. Yeah. And he is the expression, the embodiment of the law. And in the essay, what Domain says to sort of build to his central point is that God has ordained the place in society in which each person is born. And that by being born into the place they occupy in society, each person is made aware by God of what their role in the society is in God's divine order. Everybody occupies their place and plays their role, but that his point is that that is ordained by God. And the reason that I brought it up with you today is because it's very interesting to hear that concept juxtaposed against Romans chapter 13, verse 1, which says, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been established by God." I find the fact that the New Testament providing this very similar philosophy to something from the era of Louis XIV, and both of them suggesting that the order of society is divine is interesting. Especially in a country like the Bahamas, where, for whatever reason, we talk about the preamble to our Constitution making certain claims about what the what the philosophy and the philosophical underpinning of this nation's law and this nation's order and society is. We claim to be a quote-unquote Christian nation. Now, all of us have our different views of what that might mean, but the fact is, culturally, we are a church-going nation. Most people, whether it's the vast majority anymore, is arguable, but I would say the majority of people do go to church I would say the majority of people do believe that this is a quote unquote Christian nation with a moral and philosophical underpinning of Judeo-Christianity. And I believe that the majority of people in the Bahamas do believe that God ordains leadership. Political, governmental, religious, moral, all these leaders are, according to our philosophy and our understanding of philosophical and scriptural readings like Romans 13 and 1, all authority is ordained by God. That's what we believe, the majority of us. And I want to start our conversation there, because there's a complication that I want to introduce based on my reading of Jean Dumas' essay, which I think will call some people on the carpet, let's say. But before I go into that, I want to get your thoughts on the premise that I have presented.
So three quick things, if I can remember them all. First is I have to apologize and admit that I have not read this essay. So I'll have to add that to my list. The second thing is that, although I think it is of note that a philosophy expressed in the letter to Romans and this essay are separated by, let's say, 1,300 years or so, in some ways it is a lot, and then in other ways it's not. So I think it's of interest that they are so similar, but not really surprising in any way whatsoever, because one is built on the other. And then as far as...
For sure, I agree with
as,
that.
What we as a quote-unquote Christian nation, in the popular understanding of what that is to us as a people, I think that you're right. A lot of people believe in it, that this stuff is preordained. And I'm just going to come out and say that's pretty stupid for reasons that we'll get into later. I'm not saying those people are stupid. I'm saying that idea is stupid.
A challenge that I have with your statement is that it is very difficult to separate a person from their ideas. It is very difficult
True.
To say.
Do you believe the same things you did 30 years ago?
Me personally?
In the majority, yeah. Have you ever held
That's very interesting.
Stupid ideas?
Oh, absolutely. When I was a
Have
child.
You let go of some of them, at least?
As an adult, yes.
Okay. So
some
this,
of them.
This is where I'm coming from. I have had many stupid ideas in my head, and I believe myself intelligent enough to let go of them, and here's the further point. I have not let go of some of them. I still have some stupid ideas in my head.
And how many of those ideas that are in your idea or in your view stupid would you say are foundational to your sense of identity?
Well,
how many
very,
of them would you say are fundamental
because,
to who you are?
My, I don't know if this is not quite a hypothesis, but I have a belief that some of the stupid ideas in my head I have not yet identified. And so some of them may be foundational. But I can't think of any that I am aware of right now that are foundational. But some used to be. So that is relevant.
And I suppose it's also, I guess, you can't really say, can you, what is and what is not stupid without experience and new information. You acquire new knowledge, you acquire wisdom, you accrue experience, you examine your ideology in the light of new information, in the light of increased wisdom, in the light of accrued experience, and you come to the conclusion that this idea, as dearly held and as important as it has been to me as a matter of foundation for my person and foundation for my identity, this idea is a stupid idea.
Yeah, I think.
But very few people are willing to.
Right, and I think that's because there are a few key ideas that will unlock you from the necessity of having a single mooring or set of moorings, right? Mm-hmm. One of those, right up there, is the Socratic idea that the thing that I know is that I know nothing. So you can reason forth from a given set of premises, but you have to be humble enough to know, okay, I could have made an error. And number two, these axioms could be wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the thing about the essay that I found fascinating was the idea that if you accept that the monarchy is God-ordained and you accept that the laws are, well, let me rephrase. Before I say, and you accept, Domat argued that the law was necessary for the good order of society. And his subsequent argument was, it is the duty of everyone in society to obey the law. Again, for the good order of society.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted to chat about. Was this idea that if you accept that all authority is ordained by God, and you yourself wish to be quote unquote righteous in the sight of God, whether or not you want to be a Christian, whether or not you want to be a Muslim, whether you are, whatever your religious philosophy might be, at the bottom of it is a desire to be a quote unquote good and moral person. And the premise that Jean Domat presents, which I believe is premised on the same philosophy that Paul evinced in Romans 13 and 1, and which I also believe is still prevalent in how Bahamians view the country and themselves, the idea is you should obey the law. Does that mean, then, that all of our petty law-breaking is significant in the light of the argument that we are a Christian nation? Can you be a Christian nation full of people who break the speeding laws? Can you be a Christian nation full of people who bribe civil servants to get things done quickly? Can you be a Christian nation full of people who ignore domestic abuse and sexual violence that they know is happening,
mm-hmm.
and that they have a legal duty to report?
Right. Can you be a Christian nation that is not stoning people? Can you be a Christian nation
who is not putting you, there is no one listening
women
to the
in their
show.
Place in
there
the
is
church
nobody
and not
listening
allowing
to the
them
show who is surprised
to say anything to
by
you.
The direction that you have chosen to go.
None
of us are surprised.
I want to.
But the point I am making.
No, I understand
is,
the point that you're
no,
making.
No, I don't think you do.
I do.
I don't think you do.
I do. You didn't
couldn't
let me,
possibly because you have chosen to be absurd when I'm not asking an absurd question.
It is absurd.
It is not absurd.
Well,
let me rephrase.
Well, I mean, I'm claiming one thing. You're claiming another.
How is my
You haven't let
absurd.
Me finish my argument.
How is my question absurd, Matthew?
Well, since I'm now being allowed to proceed, I began that way simply to underline that you've made some interesting rhetorical moves there, right?
Interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, it's bordering on, if not strawmanning, because the question is begging, maybe it's not begging, but it's centered around the issue of what is a Christian nation? And you are implicitly setting up that, well, it has to be this thing. Now, you did say if you accept, right?
So the caveat that I issued, which is the only caveat that is required, is somehow insufficient because it was the caveat I issued. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is that if people are going to go down that road with you, sure, we could have this reasoning, right? But obviously, empirically, that is not what is going on. So it's not just that they agree or disagree with you and are violating the premise of the faith, right? It's, well, what definitions do we agree upon first before we go down this road? What is a quote-unquote Christian nation?
I hear the point you're making. I will, for the purposes of this conversation, concede it. I think it slightly misses the point, though.
Now, I get what you're saying. I'm just saying that I think that it behooves us to make some sharper arguments here.
Fair enough.
And so in the spirit of what you're saying, I'm gonna stop that line of argumentation there. To just say, okay, look, I think we could sharpen this up. But I get what you're saying, and if not completely, I get the gist of it. And I would say, yes, these people are being highly hypocritical in a lot of cases, right? I came here peeved today. Why? Because of terrible driving. But in particular, it's a strain of driving that is driven by selfishness, right? A lot of the stuff out here in society is just because people are acting in a selfish manner, right? So
I think that in the moment that people...
No, I'll argue that one.
That's fine. But in the moment that people are guilty of behaving purely from a selfish, self-centered, self-absorbed, self-involved place.
I didn't say purely, though.
I think it's purely that way.
Okay.
And I want to be clear, that's Quincy Parker saying it, not Matthew Kelly, mm-hmm. and not the Sunday Scotch Society. This is purely a Quincy Parker opinion. These people are utterly and completely self-involved. They are self-absorbed. So there is no other way for them to be but selfish. And if you...
Yeah, the caveat that I have here is not that I want to tone down the condemnation of them, right? It's just that I think in addition to this level that they're at, they do have some in-group stuff that they're taking care of. So it's not completely and utterly selfish that they're being driven by.
It is, because even if you are trying to accomplish an end for another person, the means that you choose to use to accomplish that end are your choice. And if you choose to employ self-centered means, even in service of somebody else,
right,
that does not negate the self-centeredness of what you are doing.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that I don't think it's negating it. I want to be clear. I'm saying there are additional concerns, but I agree with you 100%.
That's fine.
They're doing it selfishly.
Yeah, so if we start talking about the road,
yeah,
we ain't gonna finish.
Yeah, no problem.
The point I'm trying to clarify, maybe solidify in this conversation is, let's accept the hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
What is to be done? If we on the Sunday Scotch Society are ballsy enough to prescribe a solution, a remedy, a fix, what is it?
So if it's we, why are you asking just me?
I'm not just asking you. I'm giving you the floor to go first.
You know, for big systematic things like this, I'm going to always come back to some of the basics and talk about incentives. And although it's not the only thing, you'll go a long, long way by addressing incentives in society to get behaviors closer to what you want. Part of the problem is not just the officially stated targets, let's call them, of the official apparatus of society. So like, okay, you come to school, we want you to get an education, right? but what is actually going on in the school system, mm-hmm. right? How are we actually incentivizing teachers and kids and the administration? And how are those on the ground incentives working towards or against certain behaviors? So, you know, that would be my main prescription, is to look at, okay, how are the systems actually being incentivized? A simple version of this is enforcement. So you're on the road and you get a lot of bikes with that are not licensed, and the fella's doing fool on it, right? Sometimes they hurt themselves. A couple of weeks ago, one killed himself. So a lot of behaviors, a good way to enforce the behavior is enforcement, right? But that's not the only thing that you have to do. So it depends on context, where you are in trying to modify the system overall, et cetera. But you can't just say, okay, we're not going to have any enforcement of the rules and expect that the incentive to do right is actually going to be borne out. So, it's complex, but it does come down to what the actual on-the-ground incentives are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I accept the incentive argument. I feel that in order to complicate it a little bit, I want to point out that incentive generally has a connotation of positive reward for behavior. But in the sense that you are using it, incentive is simply a tool to motivate desired behavior. I think that is part of the challenge, is that for all of our quote-unquote Christianness of our nationhood, I don't think that we have agreed, or if we have agreed, on a set of desired behaviors, I think that agreement has been broken.
Yeah, well, that is a huge part of the issue. And then, you know, there's all these subsystems that you have to worry about. It's like, okay, there's the school, there's the home life, there's, mm-hmm. you know, how do you act in public, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's also the different personality types mm-hmm. and cultural concerns.
Yeah, but I think
some are conflicting.
They are. What I wanted to say earlier is that I think that despite all of the complications that we agree exist, enforcement of the rules
mm-hmm.
has to be at least step one. If we agree, there are these rules.
Okay.
Then whatever else you are attempting to inculcate into, whether it's an individual, a group, or an entire country.
Right, right. The reason I disagree, step one, and I'll modify, I'll say, I'll agree with that step one if I take what you just said and turn it into step zero, which is if we agree on the rules.
Which is where I started and why I started there.
Mm-hmm.
Because our general agreement,
mm-hmm.
regardless of the individual, our community agreement is that we are a Christian nation and that we have agreed to live by this constitution under these laws in this country. So there are rules already.
There are rules.
I'm not talking about your family rules.
No. But what I'm saying is the rules in some cases are so bad that what I would like to do, step one, is to revisit the agreement.
The problem with that, Matthew, is that if they don't obey these rules,
mm-hmm.
why would they obey any other rules?
See, I think that people on the whole right now don't see the contract. And that is part of the reason that they're so selfish. It's not the only thing. But they don't feel like they had any input. They don't feel any affinity towards it whatsoever. They don't have any buy-in. They don't have any skin in the game as far as they're concerned, right? They see a lot of hypocrisy in the agreement.
But Matthew, even you with your system mindset
mm-hmm.
should agree with me that the only reason they see this hypocrisy is because the rules are not enforced. If the rules were enforced, inviolably enforced,
right?
What hypocrisy would there be to identify?
No, once again, though, we have bad enough rules that I would like to revisit it before I see.
I don't
because what you're talking about is universal enforcement.
That has to be even before. Here's why I say it, right? Even before we reimagine the rules, we have to be able to follow the rules that currently exist, even if we disagree.
See, I'm not super concerned about that because I think the people are following the rule sets that they think apply to them. The problem is they don't think that the overall contract applies to them.
I agree with that. And that's the problem.
Right. But I don't think the way that you make them think that the contract applies to them is by beginning to enforce the contract. I think it's...
But of course
it is.
You've
got to get buy-in from the first...
You don't buy into something that you don't... That there is not an incentive to cause you to buy in.
I think...
And in this instance, the incentive is not to change the contract to make you happy. The incentive has to be, first of all, this is the contract. If you want to change it...
No.
Then you have to be participating in it.
I think that... Not only can you walk and chew gum, but in addition to getting more done at the same time, these would actually mutually enforce each other if you revisited the contract while starting to enforce the current one.
You are arguing a nuance that I think is impossible for you not to argue because you're who you are. But you, Matthew, will have to accept that, number one, you're a thoughtful man. Number two, you're a thoughtful man who's mostly a law-abiding citizen. Number three, you'd think about other people. You think about your influence and your impact on the community and the society.
This is why I'm conceding. And I'm not saying that we throw out my assertion that we need to re-engage on what the contract is. But I am agreeing we need to start enforcing this contract. I think there is enough good in it that, yeah, we'd benefit from enforcing the current contract. But there's enough bad in it that we must revisit it. Let's be concrete here, right? For instance, a lot of the lackadaisical attitude towards the rules is propped up, if not stemming from, leadership not caring about the rules. Would you agree?
I agree with that, and that is one of Dormack's, to my point, strongest arguments in his essay, is that the king must obey the law.
Right, but the reason that absolute that line monarchy of argumentation is stupid is because the king is the law.
No, but even the king might be the law, but the king still has a duty.
Mm-hmm.
If you accept the argument that the king is like the head of the family.
Yeah, the king it would take a benevolent dictator.
Not benevolent dictatorship, modeling appropriate behavior. It's not about being a benevolent dictator.
No, I understand that. You didn't let me finish.
Okay.
It would take a benevolent dictator to do that and not manipulate, misconstrue, promulgate poor arguments about what the quote-unquote rules that he is under, he or she, to their benefit. Because they have such absolute power that they don't have the incentive to actually model such behavior. It's only every now and again you get a Marcus Aurelius or some other benevolent king. I mean, am I being unreasonable here?
You are introducing a complication that I wish to table for the moment because I don't think you're being unreasonable, but I think it is a little more nuanced than that. But I don't want to lose the thread of our previous agreement, which is that enforcement of the current contract is critical. In order to generate, in my view, a respect for contracts, period. We can change the contract afterwards, even while we're enforcing.
Right. But okay, this is what I'm advocating, because if you start enforcing what I think are bad parts of the contract.
But those are the only parts that are being enforced.
There are some things on the books, my friend.
I agree, bro.
That we do not want.
I agree. But the problem is the law.
A resurgence in.
The problem is the law is the law. If you're going to respect it, you got to respect it. If you are going to follow the law, you have to follow all of it.
Yeah, but
you can change some of it.
Except when it's stupid.
No, that's the problem. There is no exception.
Yes, there
you
is.
You follow the law.
No.
If you believe that the law is stupid, you advocate to change it. Mm-hmm. You don't break it.
And also, but see, because
accept the stupid one is why somebody will ride at 50 miles an hour in a school zone.
I'm going to see if I could do this without resorting to the extremes. Which,
really?
Yeah.
On the Sunday Scotch Society?
Yeah. So, I mean, I could elucidate this right now. However, part of the reason we're not following certain rules is because we think they're stupid. And part of the reason we're not, as a people, following certain rules is because we don't think that we don't care. We don't care about the other person. And these are two distinct things. And then another one, which is a sort of blend of them, is that we think that our action is not going to have enough of an effect. We think it's wrong, but it's just this little thing. So 5 miles over the speed limit, right? As opposed to 50 in the school zone, like you said. So if, however, you know what, I don't think I could do it. I gotta resort to the extremes. If a rule is stupid, you have to, and most people will, unless there is some other like serious incentive on the outside.
Thank you.
If it's stupid, you have to ignore it.
I think that this is finally the place where you and I disagree, like fundamentally.
No, we don't.
We do. So clearly, I believe that this particular question is worth further conversation. But I think for the purposes of today, we can agree enforcement is important.
In particular context, not absolute.
And that's where we can disagree, because I think absolute enforcement is important.
Well, then you have no problem, sir, with the citizenship of your daughter. The only thing I want to see you doing is going down to Parliament and making a racket. That's it. I don't want you going back up to immigration or this or that or the next.
You don't have to worry about that, Matthew. My advocacy is underway. But I followed the law. Because that's the law.
So is it a stupid law?
Abso-freaking-lutely.
Okay.
I'm not saying there are no stupid laws. I'm asking you to define next time. Because that's a two-hour conversation, which we still have yet to have officially for the purposes of sharing this podcast on Guardian Talk Radio. But I believe 2025 is the year.
Okay.
I'm optimistic. In January, on the first Saturday, we tried the Whistle Pig 10-year-old small batch rye whiskey. Out of 5, how many points are you giving the Whistle Pig?
4.
Is the Whistle Pig on the list?
That's such a close one.
Provisionally. We'll put a question mark next to it.
Sure.
And we'll come back to that. Then we tried the Dooley's XO Rum, Barbados Rum. Yeah. Out of five.
Three point nine.
That is higher than I would have given it. I would have given it two.
Okay.
So we could split on three.
I'm happy to say three. I just didn't. Okay. Social pressure, man.
From who? Then last time that we were together, we had the H by Hein, a delicious French cognac. Out of five, what are your thoughts?
I just want to preface this by saying it's perhaps unfair because really my first cognac, if I had it in the past, I don't remember. But you know, it's three.
Three out of five it is.
Yeah.
Nothing that's three out of five is getting on the list. And then today's Highland Park Magnus, which we already accept, is on the list. Out of five, how would you score it?
It's a 4.5.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The first month of 2025 is dead and gone. We had some delicious tipples. We talked about the orange economy, and we talked about some other things that were equally interesting. And I believe that with the rest of this year, I'm optimistic about what is coming, both for what we're going to drink. I have a particular Macallan saved for our... our
we'll
drinks.
See how this goes, because I both very much enjoy certain Macallans, and I also am open to the argument that other people have that they're overrated, some of them.
Some of them are overrated, absolutely.
So,
but this one I have high hopes for.
Okay.
I won't say what it is because I don't know when we're going to have it. I bought the bottle. It's in my stash. I'm like, I want to bring it out at a particular moment, so we'll have to see how it goes. But in any event, Matthew, until I see you again, may all of your best and most exciting dreams come true, my friend. You are a good and kind man, and I have great enjoyment of spending time with you, and I think that you are good for me and good for us. So that's that over here.
Ciao. Man, you went straight to Dasdarovia before I could sing your praises.